You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from George Mason University School of Business. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts, Shirley Mowry from Hertzbach and Brian Jefferson from Cressa. John, can you give us a rundown on who we have on the air today, please?
Sure. We've got Chris Marquez, CEO of National Capital Contracting. Our second guest is Alan Roberts, managing partner of Lipst, Roberts, and Marquez. Our third guest is Yuman Tsang, CEO and founder of Churn Zero. And our last guest is David Stillman, CEO of Exec Vision.
Excellent. Let's get to know our first guest, Chris Marquez, CEO of National Capital Contracting. Chris, what is National Capital Contracting?
We're a federal government contracting firm, about 100 professionals, and we do unified communications and information management.
Give me that again. What's that? That sounds pretty complicated. What are you doing there?
Basically, what we do is help the federal government communicate with each other and with the citizens of the country.
Interesting. John.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have one sister, an older sister, Melissa.
And what was Melissa's influence on you?
She was fantastic growing up. She really, my parents didn't have advanced educations, and so even from as young as 7 or 8 years old, she would always be helping me with my homework and making sure that I did my homework work right. And one of the big things was helping me really be concise and meaningful with writing. So anytime I had a writing assignment, my sister was an awesome writer, and she would look over my work and help me make it better.
How did you use that example and pay it forward with other kids?
Well, with other kids at that time, you know, what I think I really ended up learning from her was the value of helping other people. So there were other kids at school that sometimes were picked on by other people. And what I would end up doing is being one of the people who would protect those children. And so I think my sister had that same feeling and helped me out when I needed help. And she became a lawyer later in life.
Tell us about your mom.
My mom is an interesting story. She's an immigrant from Korea, and she actually grew up in Korea during the war. And she won't talk about a lot of those experiences directly, but from the small amount that I've been able to get from her, and then more really from my dad and some other relatives, it was definitely one of those situations where she was running away from incoming North Korean bombers that were bombing towns and villages, and you know, all of the folks were refugees were streaming southward to try and get to the American lines.
So what traits did you pick up from your mom?
I think one of the biggest traits that I picked up from my mom is the ability to just persevere and keep pushing and work no matter what obstacles are in your way.
And how does that show up today at NCC?
I think there's a certain amount of almost delusion you need sometimes to start and run a business and be successful and continue growing it. The obstacles are huge and they're hard. And you really have to have the belief that no matter what, I've got a vision and I'm going to be able to achieve that vision. Mm-hmm. And any obstacle that gets in your way, you're going to get beyond.
Shirley?
What did your dad do for a living?
He did all kinds of things. So he was constantly working. He always had a 40-hour week job because he got married young and had kids young. So he was concerned to make sure that there was always a steady paycheck on the to bring food to the table. But then in his part-time, he ran two or three other businesses. He had a TV repair business, he ran a food wholesale business, and he also ran a farm market at the Bethesda Women's Community Farm Market.
What effect would you say he had on you?
I think there's a lot of the same things that my mom had in terms of perseverance, but the other thing is he was a consummate salesperson and had the street smarts for business. The guy could sell anything. There was a point in his life when he was selling encyclopedias in Southeast Washington, D.C., just going house to house late at night and selling this product to all those folks. Mm-hmm. So watching him be successful at that.
Brian?
Chris, I understand that you were famous as a kid. What did you learn from then to make you so successful today?
Yeah, and how were you famous?
Well, I did a lot of things in acting. So I was on a television news program for kids called Newsbag on Channel 5 here, the local Fox affiliate. And I was on a show called Bumble Bunkers up in Baltimore, Maryland, where Oprah Winfrey was actually at the time. And then one of the coolest things I did was I was one of the princes with Yul Brynner in The King and I at the Warner Theater.
Uh-huh. And so I think, what did you learn from all that stuff? Is there anything to do about building a business?
Well, I think part of it is the teamwork and everything that goes into running one of those large productions with lots of different moving parts. But the second piece that was really formative for me was the ability to get up in front of people and talk and not be self-conscious or uncomfortable with what I was saying.
I understand when you were seven, you started earning money at a young age. What were you doing to earn money when you were seven?
Well, I mentioned earlier that my dad and my mom actually ran a farm stand in the Bethesda Women's Community Farm Market. So from the age of seven, we would get up, or I would get up at 4 o'clock in the mornings, and we would load up the car and go out to the store and sell a lot of products. We sold quiches, cheeses, breads,
meats. That must have really stunk. You're seven, 8 years old, and you have to get up at 4 a.m. and it's cold?
It was not what I wanted to do, and wintertime was horrible because there wasn't a lot of heating in the building.
Uh-huh. So what did you end up doing?
Well, what I ended up doing, it wasn't one of these things where I just shuffled things around. I actually was selling product to the customers. And I would sort of watch my...
At 7 or 8 years old?
At 7
or
8.
What are you talking about?
My dad had sort of developed all these little spiels. And you know, he's a great salesman because he relates to people and he genuinely cares about their needs. And so he would have these little sales spiels and I would kind of mimic what he was saying. And I remember one specifically. It was about the quiches, which was a big product that we sold. And, you know, you would say to the customer, you should really take this quiche Lorraine home, you know, get a little side salad, get a little glass of white wine, go get your wife and sit in front of the fire and voila, that's your night.
So you're telling this, you're a 7 year old kid saying this to adults.
And the adults would laugh and buy the products.
Uh-huh. What'd you learn from that about building a business?
You know, again, what I learned from my dad is really caring about your customers and what they want. And, you know, I would talk to those customers and try to understand what it was that they were, you know, wanting to, you know, how could I give them a service or a product that they really wanted mm-hmm. to take home and enjoy.
You mentioned that at one point in time in your life you were playing the piano. Why the piano?
Well, I'm half Asian. My mom is Korean, as I mentioned, and it is definitely, she's, you know, the prototypical tiger mom. Mm-hmm. So if I had it to do today, I'd probably play guitar, but at the time my options were violin or piano.
Uh-huh. And what was the upside of you learning piano when you look back on it?
I think, you know, it's funny, as we're talking here today, a lot of the lessons that we're talking about kind of converge around what I'm doing, but it is that thing where you take something and do it over and over and over again until you're perfect. And one of the scariest things about playing piano, especially when you go to competitions and play in front of large audiences and orchestras, is you're solo on the piano and you don't want to make a mistake. When you make a mistake, it is very noticeable and it's extremely embarrassing. So you practice until you can do it and get it right.
Mm-hmm. John, what do you think?
How does that kind of intense focus as a, you know, starting at 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, piano competitions and acting, how does that show up today at NCC?
I think all of those formative experiences in my life really led me to want to start my own business. I don't like working for someone else. I feel as though I have the ability to drive things forward. I feel as though I can create an environment which is good, not just for me, but for my employees as well. I know that I truly care about my customers, and I know that I truly care and want to steward my employees. And so all of those things together, have really led to me putting together successful business.
So where does creativity that comes from being a musician, how does that apply in the business world?
You know, it's interesting that you say that, and we like to hire people that have musical backgrounds, because what we have found is that yes, they can do the rote over and over again when necessary, but there's always an aspect of creativity that comes along with it. You have to be willing to break the mold to some degree. And so I think, you know, that little trill that you can do that's not on the paper is something that adds something to your business and allows you to get outside the lines enough to be innovative.
What's the next mold you're going to break?
Oh, wow. The next mold I'm going to break? Well, you know, I'm not one of these people that thinks that I'm going to be working in a business forever. What I really would like to do is at some point step aside from that and have the opportunity to do more things in the community and really focus on that, as well as travel with my son.
I thought the idea was to make a lot of money and then go live in Florida or buy a big boat. You want to go get involved with the community? What are you talking about?
I mean, I think money is something that's important, but for me, I have sort of a bar I want to get to that allows me to have the freedom. It's really, it's never been about money for me. It's really been about having financial independence so that I can do things that I think are more valuable. My wife and I are very concerned about the community and the things that are going on in the country right now, and we'd like to be more involved.
Well, like what? What are you talking about? What are you concerned about?
Well, I think that there's a lot of strife and conflict that's going on right now. And I actually do see myself, even going back to who I was as a younger child, as someone who can really help protect folks. You know, you look at my mom and my dad's situation growing up, and really helping to protect people, give them a voice, and have people understand who they are as people so that they can sympathize with them, empathize with them.
So you're trying to earn enough money so you can go do again what you were doing as a kid, protecting other kids?
I guess on some level, that's true. And one of the things I'd really like to do is give back to the Hispanic and Asian communities by helping out with education for those communities.
Is your mom aware of your success?
She's aware.
Has she been to your office?
She has been to the office.
How do you think she felt walking into your office of 100 people?
So it's really interesting. My mom will go into the office. Mm-hmm. You can see the eyes go wide. Mm-hmm. And then she'll say, Chris, did you win a contract today?
There we go. What's more? Chris, what's the website address for National Capital Contracting?
NCCsite.com.
Let me have that one more time, please.
NCCsite, SITE.com.
We've been speaking with Chris Marquez here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break.
Yeah, we did it. That was an excellent idea.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Alan Roberts, who's the managing partner of Lips, Roberts, and Marquez. Alan, what is Lips, Roberts, and Marquez? What are you guys doing?
We are a suburban Maryland CPA firm who specializes in taking care of medical professionals and real estate developers, as well as a number of individuals.
How large or how small is this firm?
We're a staff of 18.
Mm-hmm. And where are you from originally?
I'm from suburban Maryland.
Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters?
I have three brothers.
And where are you in the pecking order?
I am the baby of the family.
Uh-huh. You know? And what was going on with you 8 to 14 years old?
8 to 14, I was busy trying to make money to support my family.
Why?
Well, my parents were both suffered from alcoholism, and I had to basically raise myself.
Uh-huh. Didn't you use a line earlier in the green room that their challenges were my challenges or something like
Yes, that's right. Their challenges became my challenges because it was a bit of a role reversal. They became infantile and I became the parent at times.
But you didn't have to take on that responsibility, did you?
Well, if I wanted to survive, I did. And it was a matter of survival.
Yeah, but you could have played victim. You didn't. How did you take on the responsibility?
I went out, I worked odd jobs, I would mow lawns, rake leaves, shovel snow.
John, why don't you give me a hand?
So while all this was going on, these jobs, how did that affect your school?
Well, at the age of 16, I left home because of the problems at home, and I was on my own. I went became a carpet installer and lived with my brother for a short period of time, but then at the age of 19, I got married, and I started going back to school at night and finished my high school diploma at age 20, in which case I went on to the University of Maryland.
So what effect does it have on a 16 or 17-year-old when they're the ones that got to put a roof over their head and they're the source of their next meal?
Life is full of challenges, and you've got to meet the challenges.
Well, you met the challenge. You didn't have to, but you did.
Yep.
What's that tell us about you?
Well, I'm a survivor.
Listen, you're running an accounting practice. You're the managing partner.
Right.
How's that translate into your being the managing partner and how you deal with your clients and your staff?
You got to take care of your clients, and you got to take care of your staff, and you've got to bridge.
You're not the typical accountant that likes pushing numbers around. You're like this really, really caring kind of people person, aren't you?
Well, I'd like to think that. Now, some of my staff might differ.
No, I think so. I think it's pretty obvious that you're all about the people, taking care of people, and taking responsibility. Shirley?
You said you were the youngest of four. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with your brothers.
Well, fortunately, I learned from my brothers and from all of their mistakes, and so that they helped pave the way for me. I mean, they really did in a sort of a negative way, but I learned from all their mistakes, and I went on from there.
Boy, you grew up with a lot of adversity. A lot of things were going wacko near you. You were able to figure out what the right course is. Let me ask you a question. When you're dealing with your clients, Are you the priest in the organization where everybody comes and talks to you about their issues?
I most certainly am, and clients and staff alike.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
They will come to me with their problems.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because I think I've become compassionate in my experiences and growing up with my family.
And that doesn't sound like a typical accounting firm. I thought you guys help people with like numbers and stuff.
And we do, and we do that. But you know, we're part therapist and part financial advisor.
Thank you. That's interesting. Yeah. So tell me, how young were you when you did your first tax return?
At the age of 12, when I was working for...
No. I asked you, how young were you when you did your first tax return?
I was 12.
Okay, tell me about that. That's interesting.
So I was working at a little 7-Eleven kind of a store, and they gave me a W-2 at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I then took that and went into the instructions and figured out the puzzle to getting a refund, which I was most elated
about. Hold on a second. You're telling me you're 12 years old and you filed your own tax return.
I did.
And yeah. You thought it was a puzzle. You sort of enjoyed that?
I did. It was a challenge, and I think I got all my money back.
So tell me, so did that have anything to do with the fact that you chose accounting and to run an accounting firm?
I think so. I initially was an auditor, which I quickly found out that was not my calling.
As opposed to?
Being a tax guy. And I went on to get a master's in taxation, so
yeah,
I know a
but
few
it doesn't.
Things.
It sounds to me like more than the tax guy. I mean, you know, maybe you enjoy the puzzle of tax, but it sounds to me like you're really like the dad of the organization. You're like the dad of your staff. You're like the dad to
your
clients.
You got to be the father. You got to be the brother. You got to be that person.
So you are who you were looking for back then.
Yeah, I mean, what I was lacking in my own childhood, looking for that guidance, you know, that we all need, you know, if we're going to get through this journey called life.
John?
Yeah, you talked about people that helped you, and you mentioned your first wife. You got married at 19.
Yep.
Tell us about her and what she did to help you out at that point.
We met when I was just barely 18, and we married quickly. She helped me get back to high school. I went to high school at night. Graduating at the age of 20, I solicited the support of Steny Hoyer, who was a state senator in the Maryland at the time, and he gave me nearly a full tuition scholarship to the University of Maryland. I'm so grateful. One quick side thing here is that I finished school in 3 years, and the fourth year I got a letter from Steny's office saying, it's come to our attention that you are not completing your fourth year. So I quickly let him know.
So you applied for your own scholarship?
With my wife. My wife did this.
Your wife did what?
She helped me write a letter to him. It was a hard luck story letter. I mean, I can't get around that. That's just the way it is. And he answered the call.
Mm-hmm. Brian, did you have a question?
Yeah. Who had the strongest influence on your life? What was that influence?
Yeah, as a kid.
As a kid, it was my teachers all along the way, but especially the guidance counselor when I went back to night school. And my first wife and Steny Hoyer, all of those had a very, molding effect on where I'm at today.
You sure. Said Steny answered the call for you.
Yes.
Whose call are you answering now?
I'm trying to give it back. I'm a member of Rotary International, and we do a lot of humanitarian work. It's we like to think of as humanity in motion. So,
what's the most meaningful thing? Personally meaningful thing you've done with the Rotary Club?
Raising money for the eradication of polio and also helping refugees settle into the suburban Maryland suburbs.
You really find meaning from doing that?
I'm sorry?
You really find meaning from doing that?
I do. I mean...
It seems so distant and so... What kind of meaning do you find in that stuff?
Because life is a struggle and, you know, people need a hand up, not a handout. And that I think that's where Rotary really shines. We try to give that hand up.
So the 16-year-old who needed help and struggled now has turned around and is helping immigrants and other people who are struggling.
Absolutely, yes. Just like Steny Hoyer did, just like my first wife. God bless her.
Mm-hmm. So you're the kind of guy that believes in developing your team as opposed to you do your job or get out of here?
No, my job is it starts when I wake up and it ends when I close my eyes.
You have pretty close relationships with your team members, don't you?
Oh yeah, yes, mm-hmm. My partners, and especially you.
Yeah, I guess you don't have a lot of turnover either. What's the website address of this organization?
Yes, the website is lrmcpas.com.
Let me have that again.
It's LRM, Lips, Roberts & Marquez, CPAs.com.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Alan Roberts, managing partner of Lips, Roberts & Marquez here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com. Learn more about our executive leaders. We're back in a moment right after this break. Nailed it.
Excellent.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Yuman Tsang, CEO of an organization known as Churn Zero. Yuman, what is Churn Zero? What are you guys up to?
Yeah, we are a fast-growing software company, and we cater to businesses. We help them understand their customers, help make them successful so that customers stay with them forever.
Ooh, interesting. And how large or how small is this organization?
Yeah, we're currently about 27 employees.
Alrighty, and where did the venture capital come from to start this thing?
We recently raised money from GrowTech as well as Midland Capital in the DC area.
Uh-huh. Why would a venture capital fund invest in you?
You know, this is my fourth company. Three of them have exited, and I've had a decent track record running software companies.
Mm-hmm. So you have a successful track record, which is the reason they invested in you. I guess the idea was a good. What's more important, a good idea or a good team?
You know, a good idea is necessary, but a great team is the difference between success and failure.
I guess if you get the right team, I guess the reason the team is more important is because if you get the right team in place, they'll keep the idea current. Even if it's a great idea and you get the wrong team, the market's going to change. So I guess it is the people. You must be really masterful at pulling together a team. Where were you from originally?
I was born in New York City.
Uh-huh. How many brothers and sisters?
Three sisters and a brother.
Where are you in the pecking order?
I am two.
Uh-huh. How young were you when you started working?
I was eight.
Doing what?
I worked in my dad's Chinese restaurant. He was the manager.
Your dad was a manager of a Chinese restaurant, and what were you doing at the age of eight?
Eight, I was doing takeout, running takeout orders back from the back of the house to the front of the house and vice versa, and then packing those orders.
And you were talking to the clients. You were taking the orders and stuff.
I was.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was one of the few who spoke English.
Oh, boy. Okay. So you had a lot of responsibility at the age of eight. And what would your mom do for a living?
My mom was a seamstress.
Uh-huh. John?
So you were the only one who spoke really great English. It seems to imply your parents were not born in the United States. Where are they from?
They were both from China. They were both immigrants.
And what did your mom do?
My mom was a seamstress.
And so she kind of worked a little bit at home to make a little extra money on the side?
Oh, no. She worked in what you would probably call a sweatshop, 6 days a week, 12 hours a day.
So she's working 72 hours a week, and your father's running a restaurant. I'm sure that's a 70 or 80 hour a week job.
Mm-hmm.
So what's it like being the son of parents who are both working 70 to 80 hours a week?
It felt normal, actually. It wasn't. I grew up in Chinatown, and my peers and my classmates all had parents doing the same thing.
So everyone's working their backsides off, so
yeah,
to speak.
Sure.
You started at 8 in the restaurant. How long did you work there?
Until I was 20.
So 12 years working in a restaurant. What did you do toward the end of that time in the restaurant?
I was a waiter and bartender at the end.
So what does being a waiter and bartender, what does that teach you about people?
You know, it's really about sort of my coworkers there. I mean, they were all immigrant men, all certainly much older than me, twice and three times as old as I was. And all they could do was work hard. You know, none of them had strong educations. And that's really what I learned, was just really the power of hard work.
So what did that teach you, or how did that inspire you to move forward in your life?
You know, when I think about what I can bring to a business, or, you know, what my competitive advantage is, you know, I was lucky enough to have a good education. I was lucky enough to just be surrounded by smart people. But the only thing I can control is how much focus and work I can bring to a task.
So you applied that same kind of focus to school. How'd that work out?
It worked out well. I actually was a good student. I won a couple of science fairs, although I had a really good partner. I was really the marketing guy. And I got a scholarship to a private prep school, so I went to a boarding school, and then I got into Yale.
So what did your parents, who immigrated from China, think about you going to private prep school in a prestigious college?
You know, they didn't know. You know, I mean, just to give you an example, when I got into Yale, they had never heard of it. And, you know, they said, it's okay. You know, I'm sure you'll have a great education.
So Yale is okay, huh?
They didn't know.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, they never heard of it.
Mm-hmm. Who's got the next question? Shirley?
I'm curious if you can retire at this point.
You know, I'm pretty low budget, so yes, I can. But I've also done pretty well for myself.
And why don't you retire?
I love to work. I really do. Maybe it's just hammered into me after so many hours, but yeah, I just can't think about doing anything else on a Saturday or Sunday.
What do you want to do when you grow up? You don't have to work, but you want to work. What do you see the future looking like?
I still feel like a young man. I have 20, 30 years left of experience of working with other great people and start interesting businesses. To me, that's just probably the funnest thing I can do.
It sounds to me like you really did get a lot of hard work hammered into you. And it wasn't just the hard work. It was also, excelling with the getting the straight A's and so on and so forth.
Yeah, work sometimes is luck. And,
It sounds to me like you make your own luck by working hard. Is that fair to say? Even though you may have a good sense of timing, it comes from hard work.
You can certainly take advantage of luck when you're there.
Mm-hmm. Chris, Brian, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm curious. How was it working under your parents as an employee, their son?
My dad was a quiet person, never really gave me much direction except that he worked hard. And my mom was on my case all the time. So they were very different, but I certainly learned the power of hard work from my dad as well as high expectations from my mom.
And what do you look for in your people?
Similar things, I don't look at what school they went to. I don't look at, whether they're extracurricular. I really look at, hey, do you have good focus? Have you worked hard? Have you had success? That's what I really look for when I hire folks.
Mm-hmm. John?
What do your parents think about your success?
They're both gone now, but they would be proud.
Yeah. So I'm curious, you're driven from a very early age, working at 8, pressure to excel in all realms. How do you balance that as a parent so that you push your kids enough but don't overdo it?
Yeah, that's a great question. This is not the best mix of what a person should be. I actually think I'm overdoing it a bit. So I don't expect that either from the folks who work for me as much as I expect from myself. And I certainly can't expect that from, the next generation. I just don't think it's a fair thing to ask.
How many hours a week do you typically work?
Today?
Yeah.
At least 60, 70 hours a week.
So you're backing off just a little bit then?
Backing off a little bit.
Yeah. So how do you communicate to your employees and your child that, hard work is a virtue and you're working hard, but don't do quite as much as I did? How do you communicate that? Or do you communicate that?
I don't. I'm a believer in pacing, right? Be a pace horse and see what other people get out of it.
What's the similarity between being a dad and being the CEO? Similarity between being the dad and the CEO?
Being a dad and a CEO, they're different. I actually have more control as a CEO as I do as a dad.
What have you learned being a dad that's helped you as a CEO?
I think that's a great question. I've learned how to do more with less control. In other words, don't try to control it as much. As a CEO, you feel like you have the authority to tell people what to do. As a with children, that doesn't work. And with employees, that probably doesn't work. So, I certainly learned something from being mm-hmm. a dad.
That's interesting. So it's all about building the team.
Absolutely. In fact, when I look back at my career, it's not going to be about, the exits or money. It's going to be, wow, those, the people I worked with and nurtured, they've gone on to do really interesting things. They're CXOs. They've started their own businesses. That's what's most interesting to me.
What's most interesting?
That they've succeeded. Right, that they've gone on and actually been very successful in their own careers and done the things they wanted to do.
So you're the kind of guy, you're not a winner, you're a star. Which means that as opposed to you winning at the expense of everybody else, you have to, for somebody's got to lose for you to win. You don't want somebody to lose, you want to win with the team.
Oh yeah, I actually don't. I'm extremely competitive, ask my friends and family, but I don't think you win. I don't think there's always a loser if you win. I always want to win, but it doesn't mean that there are losers.
Right, you want to win with the team. Have you brought people into other businesses from previous businesses?
Have I brought people into my current business from
previous?
Absolutely. In fact, I would say of the 20 folks, 20 plus folks, at least half of people we've worked with before.
Well, why would they come with you?
you know, when you build a great team and they've enjoyed working with you in the past, they're going to follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're the kind of guy that leads people into they believe in you.
I hope so. Yes.
Uh-huh. You're a natural leader. Give us an idea. How young were you when these leadership skills showed up?
You know, I actually think I was a late bloomer as a leader. you know, I wasn't very confident. You know, in high school, I worked hard. I knew I had that, and only when I started getting success under my belt did I feel like, you know, I can lead others. And you know, it really took some risks, having partners that you felt, you know, that you believe in and build great product, and only then did I get confidence.
Mm-hmm. So you're always looking at the next great idea, as well as, you know, who else can you do other stuff with?
I have a lot of ideas. Mm-hmm. Not all of them good, but they're certainly, certainly there.
Well, what's the website address of this organization called Churn Zero?
We are at churnzero.net.
Let me have that one more time.
Churnzero.net.
Churnzero.net. We've been speaking with Yuman Tsang, CEO of Churn Zero here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break.
Excellent.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce David Stolman, CEO of Exec Vision. David, what is Exec Vision? What are you guys doing?
Exec Vision is a call coaching software platform that drives human behavior change and empowers employees to get better.
Wow. How large or how small is this company?
About 50 employees.
And where are you from originally?
Grew up in New York and then moved to Colorado during my teenage years.
What kind of sports did you play?
All of them. Basketball, baseball, soccer, tennis, skiing.
What was your role in the basketball team?
I was a point guard.
So what's the personality trait of a point guard?
Aggressive. Leader, wants to take control, wants the ball in their hands so that they can make the decisions.
What's that have to do with your being a point guard, with your being the CEO of Exec Vision?
Yeah, I think the characteristics are the same. At the end of the day, the accountability of a CEO, of the business, starts and ends with the CEO. It's you succeed or you fail with the decisions that you make. Now, the team behind it is the reason you succeed or fail, but you have to be the one that's guiding the ship.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you were involved with skiing. Why'd you like skiing?
Risk, danger, okay. Being able to push your limits and boundaries. There is, you can pretty much be as daring and as scary at any moment as you want, depending upon where you're skiing.
So when's the first time you bit off more than you could chew?
Honestly, probably before I could even remember. I've been skiing since I'm 3, which seems sort of impossible now. But I have an older brother. I'm the youngest of 2, but my older brother is a bit of a daredevil and not sure that he cares about his own safety or the safety of others around him at times. So I skied with him. And because he was 5 years older, we went to places where a 6-year-old or a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old probably shouldn't be skiing.
Mm-hmm. So how do you balance that love kind of or seeking out of risk and the idea you can probably save any situation? How do you balance that with being a CEO of a growing company and having to employ 50 people and keep them employed?
I think it's about being prepared. You have to know your boundaries and still be able to push them. You know, I'm a sales guy, so you think about quotas and you think about goals, and those are different things that people don't realize. So it's the same thing with anything you're trying to do, is where am I currently and how far can I go and what do I need to do to get there? So again, I think when you're skiing, you want to push the envelope, but you only want to do it in a stepwise fashion to ensure that you don't kill yourself.
Shirley?
What did your mom do for a living?
My mom was a stay-at-home mom.
And how about your father?
My dad's an entrepreneur. He's an architect and has always started his own businesses doing things related to design around architecture, but again, always trying to find sort of the right path to build a business.
Mm-hmm. What would you say you bring to work from each of them?
Oh, my mom, tiger mom, but a perfectionist as well. The expectation was you are perfect. So if you got a 97, what happened to the final 3 points? Why didn't you get 100? Not congratulations, you were number one in your class. And at the time, it's kind of annoying and terrible, but in hindsight, it sort of drills into you what good really looks like and how your expectations of yourself should be higher than where you at.
And what did you get from dad?
Sales, entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. My dad's always selling. He could sell anything to anyone at any time.
You mentioned when you were a kid that you were working in a restaurant, you were washing dishes and then bussing tables. What did you do different than the other kids that wash dishes and bus tables?
Yeah, again, a lot of it wasn't that young kids were doing it. I did it because I wanted to get ahead. I wanted to be a waiter. But the only way to get a waiter job is you need waiting experience, mm-hmm. which seems kind of silly, mm-hmm. but the only way to get waiting experience is work your way up. Mm-hmm. So that job starts at a dishwasher. Mm-hmm. And you have to take your dishwashing job, even though it's the bottom rung of the ladder, as if it was the restaurant general manager. And it's coming to work every day, regardless of what the job is, with professionalism to do the job better than anyone else that's doing that job.
So you're the CEO of a 50-person company, but you don't think anybody owes you anything. You worked hard from the ground up as a busboy, and you did it with pride, didn't you, in order to become a waiter. It's like you believe in working hard each step of the way. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, and we run our business the same way. It's a meritocracy. So if you've been with us for 2 months or 2 years, when the next job comes open, it's anyone's able to apply, and anyone that is qualified and demonstrates why they should be doing that next position will get the job.
Wait a minute. Isn't that what your whole business is about, is creating a meritocracy? Isn't that what the benefit of your software is you really can find out who's great at doing what, and therefore they deserve the opportunity?
Absolutely.
So you really believe in merit?
I do. At the end of the day, you put in what you get out, and that's the way it should be. People shouldn't get ahead just because they were there first.
All right, and you're walking the walk and talking the talk, so I got it. I got it loud and clear. You know, you're the one who worked hard as a busboy. Brian, what are you thinking?
David, are you a team player?
I am now. I wasn't when I was younger because it was about me, and it was about getting ahead, and it was about sales. And those skills don't necessarily translate to being a CEO or a business leader. So I'm a late bloomer in that too. And I've had to learn from a lot of failures about expectations and setting that your expectations of yourself on other people. And now it's less about my expectations on them, and it's understanding what their expectations of themselves are and how to help them accomplish what they need to. So it's happened over a long period of time.
Yeah, you're working at earning the role of CEO. It sounds to me like you're being critical of yourself. You know, what should I be doing better in order to continue to earn my role as CEO? Brian, what else are you thinking?
How do you mold potential? What are those nuggets? What do they look like?
It's a great question. I think it starts with who you hire first. So we hire for cultural fit. We hire for attitude. We hire for hard work, passion, and dedication. We don't hire for have you done this role before. And I think if you start with the right mold of the right person, and you're always trying to hire people that theoretically could take your job, and then it's spending a lot of time with them one-on-one every week to understand what are their objectives, what are their goals, how are they driving themselves to getting there, mm-hmm. and helping them work through those challenges.
What's the website address for ExecVision?
ExecVision.io.
Let me have that one more time.
ExecVision, ExecVision.io.
Excellent. We've been speaking with David Stillman, CEO of ExecVision, here on Executive Leaders Radio. John, can you give us a rundown on who else we've had the opportunity of speaking with?
Please? Our first guest today was Chris Marquez, CEO of National Capital Contracting. Our second guest was Alan Roberts, managing partner of Lipst, Roberts, and Marquez. Our third guest was Yuman Sang, CEO and founder of Churn Zero. And we just talked to David Stillman, CEO of ExecVision.
I would like to thank my co-hosts, including Shirley Mowry, Hertzbach, Brian Jefferson, Cressa, and John Shuhart, Graybeard Coaching, for giving me hand structure in the questions. Hope you're providing a listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for joining us today, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.
We nailed that. That was a great show.